This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Changes are coming to public education in North Carolina. The General Assembly has already filed 14 separate bills that would affect public education. They range from shaking up the state school board to making students learn cursive handwriting. The big change may be in the rise in the number of charter schools. The State Department of Public Instruction has received 70 applications for new charter schools for 2014. As part of our ongoing American Graduate Project, we're talking with WUNC education reporter Dave DeWitt about how these changes will affect North Carolina schools. Dave, welcome.
Hi, Frank.
So let's start with the charter schools. There had been a cap at 100 for a long, long time. Now 70 new applications for 2014, 25 scheduled to open this fall. Where are these charter schools now, and how will this change things?
Well, the charter schools are, as they have been really since the charter school legislation was created and that cap was in place, are largely in metropolitan areas in North Carolina. Not entirely, but the vast majority of them are in Charlotte, Mecklenburg, Winston-Salem, Forsyth, Guilford, Greensboro, and Wake County and Durham County. And there's a lot of reasons for that, and there's a lot of people working to try and change that. But the new applications, of which there are 70, and that won't be the number that originally comes around to 2014. A lot of them will fall by the wayside, not be approved or not be able to get their materials or all their things together. But Charlotte-Mecklenburg has 19 proposed. They also have the highest number of students in their district who attend charter schools. Durham has a higher percentage, but the actual number is highest in Charlotte-Mecklenburg. Here in the Triangle, the number is 16. Raleigh, Wake County has 9. Durham has 5 proposed. So it would make a big change. Like you said, the cap is gone now. And never to return, most likely. And so there's going to be a lot more charter schools, a lot more different types of charter schools. But so far, we're seeing them clustered in those metropolitan areas.
And we should describe and define exactly what a charter school is and what it isn't.
It is a public school. They are exempt from some of the rules and regulations of typical public schools or traditional public schools. They are usually designed around a certain type of curricular activity or focus. There are STEM charter schools. There are creative arts charter schools. There are charter schools for elementary. There are some that go K through all the way through high school. So they're all over the map in terms of what kinds of learning processes they have, what types of curriculum they have. Students still have to take the end of grade and end of class test scores, and that's important to know. They receive public dollars. There are also virtual charter schools. There aren't any in North Carolina. There are some proposed. They are in other states. And the State Board of Education has come up with some different rules for online charter schools. So they really run the gamut in terms of the educational experience and the type of school. But they are public schools and they receive public money.
Public schools. And so they're under the same accountability standards and a local school board, same school board, all of that.
No, they actually are. They are under accountability to the state. There's a state office of charter schools. And that's actually another interesting story, because when there was a cap of 100, that office of charter schools has a couple of people in it, not many. Their supervisory role at that time, they were pretty overworked. Now you can only imagine how overworked they're going to be. So supervision is going to be one of these sticking points moving forward. How greatly regulated will these school districts be? And there are a lot of conversations going on that oversight of these charter schools should be with the local school board, that these, for example, the Wake County School Board should oversee charter schools. That's one of those topics of conversation that will be ongoing. There are a lot of people who like that idea, a lot of people who don't like that idea. But charter schools right now are supervised by the State Board of Education.
So what's the process? How do I get approved to be a charter school in North Carolina?
Well, you go through the process of filling out an application. You start with sort of a letter of intent, and then you start off with a charter application. And you get approved at this different points throughout the process. Your charter application is pretty involved. You have to talk about how you will get financing, how the physical space is going to be laid out, the curricular activities you're going to be involved in, the types of students you're going to serve. You've got to come up with a pretty broad charter application. And then that's gone through pretty closely by the State Board of Education. You either get approved or you don't. So there's a lot of different variations of those applications. They're all online for people to go see. And if you are considering going to a charter school or having your students apply to a charter school, it's a very good idea to go read the original charter. Anytime a school wants to change that charter somehow, if they want to tweak their curriculum or if they want to tweak some other aspects of it, they have to go back and get it approved by the State Board of Education. So a lot of the charter schools have done that, the ones that have been in place for more than a decade. have made small changes to their charter, and they always have to go back and get that okayed.
You mentioned financing is one of the things that you're going to have to document. How are you going to get financed? Is a public school, isn't it financed the same way as other public schools?
Sure, but you also have to divulge any relationship you may have with a for-profit company that may be coming in to run your school, and that's happened frequently. You have to have a nonprofit board, but you may have a for-public company that you pay to come in and manage the school. And while we're on the idea of finances, there's a lot of different types of charter schools, some successful, however you want to define that, some that struggle more. A lot of the better charter schools, especially now as they get more established, you're seeing them start private fundraising campaigns. Charter schools start with a pile of money that comes from the state, depending on how many students they have, a per pupil expenditure. They get that money, and then they are free to go out and get federal grants, which some do. They go out and get private foundation grants, and then go out and raise money. And the better private schools, the more connected, the more time they have to, administrators have to go out and try to get some of these grants. It does create a sort of have and have not, even among the charter schools. They can have more resources if they've gone out and successfully raised money outside the school.
Clearly, the state thought this was a good idea at some level. There were 100 permissible for a long time. So what's the theory? Why did the state permit these in the first place?
The idea was that a lot of these charter schools would be laboratories of education. They would share, that they would try new things, whether it be project-based learning or creative arts learning or STEM education, and then they would bring some of what they learn in those smaller settings to the larger school districts. So the larger school districts could then implement those on maybe a larger scale. That really hasn't happened. It hasn't happened like a lot of people hoped it would. Charter schools now are really an option for parents who either are unhappy with the current public school or just feel that their child would be better served in a sometimes smaller environment or an environment with a different curricular focus. And that's really what charter schools have become. As they've grown largely apart from the traditional public schools, but you're now seeing a lot of efforts in different school districts for more cooperation. School districts are realizing now that charter schools are here to stay. Charter schools are realizing that there are a lot of things that they've got to learn and can learn from the traditional public schools. You're seeing now some of these efforts of coming together in cooperation. You're seeing that in Durham. You're seeing that in Charlotte-Mecklenburg as well.
What was the resistance to lifting the cap? As long as Democrats were in control, the cap stayed at 100. Republicans took control, and about the first thing they did was to lift that cap. So it does seem like a partisan issue, but what's the argument against lifting the cap? Why were the Democrats in this case so resistant to that kind of change?
Well, there's no doubt charter schools draw resources away from traditional public schools. I don't think there's any way you can argue otherwise. When 9-10% of your students leave your public school district, go to charter schools, they take that money with them. That is a loss of resources for traditional public schools, for teachers, for teacher assistants, for principals, and for everything it takes to run a school. So those resources are going elsewhere, and they're less regulated. There's a lot less supervision about how that money might be spent. Now, there is some, but a lot of people argue not enough. So you can understand the traditional public school establishment not wanting to see lower resources. North Carolina already ranks 48th in per pupil spending in the country. And if you're a principal, you see less and less money now because you've got students who are leaving. So the argument was, if you have 200, 250 unregulated charter schools out there taking resources away from traditional public schools, that's going to be harmful. Also, there are a lot of reasons that there's a lot of proof that charter schools don't perform better than traditional public schools, especially for low-income and at-risk kids. That's been proven by a study in 2009 from Stanford. It's been proven sort of repeatedly along the line here. And plus, charter schools, there is some resegregation going on. Charter schools have earned reputations now as they've been established for a little while. And there are charter schools with a high percentage of white students, some charter schools with a high percentage of African-American or Latino students. And that desegregation, that diversity aspect that I think a lot of people really like about the traditional public schools and believe that there's some educational value to that, that is being taken away a little bit as the charter schools sort of aren't as diverse as the communities they serve.
And the argument for lifting the lid, one you touched on earlier, let 1,000 flowers grow. Maybe one of these labs is going to turn up a solution. Also, choice was a big part of this. So talk about that as a reason for lifting the cap.
Well, as a reason for lifting the cap, choice, there are a lot of people who don't thrive in traditional public schools. A lot of students, a lot of parents have things about the public schools they don't like. A lot of charter schools are smaller environments. There's a lot of research to prove that smaller environments are better for education. But the idea that that many charter schools could spread out, and it, as I said, they've sort of spread out unevenly. They're in these traditional areas where what's interesting is a lot of Democrats and a lot of liberals tend to, you know, collect in the metropolitan areas. So that's kind of interesting. The charter school hasn't been as adopted in the rural areas, and I think that's pretty telling here throughout the state.
And let's talk about one example quickly before we take a break. One of the schools would be a virtual charter school, an online school for K through 12 students. Tell us about that one.
Well, the original one was last year, Cabarrus County. They tried to start an online charter school that, while it would be located in Cabarrus County, it would serve all students and could serve as many as a couple thousand to up to 10, 12,000 once it got established. The State Board of Education sort of ignored the application for a while. Then it went to the courts, and the courts sided with the Department of Public Instruction and the State Board of Education. And a new set of rules has come into place in January, set up by the State Board of Education, which was still sort of under control of Democratic appointees. And they said there would be less per pupil for virtual schools, anyone that applied down the road. And there'd be some other rules in place, like no higher than 15% turnover in a year. Well, online schools have been proven throughout the country to have a lot higher turnover in that, and the for-profit companies want more than just the smaller amount of per-pupil funding. So that's going to be a huge fight going forward in the state legislature and the school board as new members of the school board are appointed.
We're talking about the impact of more charter schools in North Carolina. We'll parse some of the arguments when our conversation continues on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay tuned. This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Education reporter Dave DeWitt gave us an overview of the situation on charter schools and education in North Carolina. Now we want to focus more specifically on charter schools and how they're changing the face of the state's education system, or how they might. Dave will stay with us, but joining us now is Helen Ladd. She's a professor of policy studies and economics at the Sanford School of Public Policy at Duke University. Helen, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you very much. Delighted to be here.
Also with us in the studio, Barry Smith, associate editor for the Carolina Journal, a publication of the John Locke Foundation. Barry, welcome. Good to have you here.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Helen, you and your colleagues recently put out a study that talks about the racial makeup and diversity at charter schools compared to non-charter schools. What did you find?
Yeah. So that was part of a larger study by my colleagues Charles Klopfelter and Jacob Bigdor and I, where we were looking at updating some of our earlier studies of racial segregation and economic segregation across all schools in North Carolina. But as one part of that study, we focused specifically on charter schools and used the data, detailed data on each of the 100 charter schools that were in place, to show that the existence of these 100 charter schools was increasing racial segregation throughout the state. But then we looked very carefully at the individual charter schools. And the problem with the charter schools is that if you just look at the average percentages, say, of Black and Latino students, it looks like the charter schools are diverse. But once you look at individual schools, what you find is the schools are either disproportionately white or disproportionately Black and Latino, and much more so than the traditional public schools
but
in the state.
Let me ask you, the trend toward resegregation has been going on for at least a decade, maybe the last 20 years or so. Do we know the charter schools are responsible for this, or if they're just part of this resegregation that we're seeing?
Well, so what's interesting in our you are correct in saying that there has been resegregation in North Carolina schools, but our broader study recently suggested that racial resegregation across the state as a whole has leveled off and has not been increasing. It is the case, though, that economic segregation across schools in the state is still increasing, so that's cause for concern. But so it's not that racial segregation is increasing a lot, but charter schools are contributing to racial segregation, and as we expand the number of charter schools, the danger is that they will lead to even more racial segregation.
And getting back to something, an earlier finding or a finding that you talked about earlier, in those particular schools, there seems to be a lot less diversity within each school.
That's very much, and that shouldn't surprise you. Charter schools are schools of choice, and what that means is no students are assigned to a charter school. So parents choose to put their children in charter schools. And in some work that I did 10 years ago looking at charter schools in North Carolina, We looked at the choices different families would make, and we found that white families who were putting their children into charter schools were looking for charter schools that were less than 20% non-white, black or Latino, whereas the black parents putting their children in charter schools wanted a more diverse setting. They wanted schools that were 40 to 60% black or Hispanic. But the result of these asymmetric preferences is that you end up with lots of schools that are disproportionately white, lots of charter schools that are disproportionately white or disproportionately non-white.
Barry, does this surprise you?
It doesn't surprise me. And one reason is a lot of times some charter schools are targeted for specific populations, and as it turns out, maybe the racial makeup would be disproportionate. For example, I know a lot of, in our metropolitan schools, a lot of them are targeted for inner city areas, and that is where schools have, at least a lot of parents feel that the schools, traditional public schools, have not served their children very well. And you know, this provides an option for them, and For that reason, it may be a higher percentage minority than the traditional public schools are.
What isn't the theory of this, the charter school, wherever you locate it, is we're going to do things differently. So whatever problems that local public school was having, we're going to address those because we're the charter school. We've got a different set of rules and a whole different approach.
Right. A different set of rules you got. And again, you know, like Helen mentioned, there are schools of choice. Parents can choose to send them there if they if they go there and they're not serving their children, they can pluck them back out and put them back in the traditional school.
So do you think that by lifting the lid here, expanding the number of schools, we're going to start seeing more diversity within those charter schools, the new charter schools, as they expand in number across the state?
At the individual schools, I wouldn't bet on it. It might happen. That's something that we don't know. I don't know any reason why these would necessarily be any different than the previous schools would be, except for, as Dave mentioned earlier, most of the charter schools are now in metropolitan areas, and that's where the people are. But you know, there's a movement now to try to get some into the more rural areas. And when you only have maybe one, there are a lot of counties that don't have a charter school. So when you just open one in a county, then that may be one that a lot of folks of all different ethnic backgrounds may want to flock to.
Dave, in terms of funding, you know, there's a per pupil allotment for each student, for each school. And of course, it goes up. The more students you have, the more you get. Does that include money for transportation and free and reduced lunch? What happens there in charter schools?
There are no restrictions on what that money can be used for. So typically, charter schools have tried to put as much money that as possible into sort of instruction purposes. They tend to have smaller administrations because they tend to be smaller schools. A lot of these charter schools have chosen not to have transportation or meal plans. Some of them do. So they can use that money as they see fit. A lot of them, like I said, put it into facilities. Some of them rent very cheap facilities. Some of them put it into teacher salaries. Some of them don't. So there aren't a lot of restrictions on what you can use that money for. And like I said earlier, charter schools that have been established now for quite some time, and I'm thinking about schools like Raleigh Charter High School, which has a really good reputation in Raleigh, they've started private fundraising efforts to try to raise their revenues. And there are also a lot of grant opportunities out there. But to get the grant opportunities, you have to understand where they are. You have to be pretty savvy. Grant applications can be complicated. And so administrators who know how to do that have to be the ones who try to go get that money. And if it's a new charter school and it's started by an educator and that person is constantly just trying to start the school and get things running, sometimes it's not always a lot of time left to go apply for grants.
Well, and also, I guess if your parent base was better connected than another, then fundraising becomes easier. So Helen and Barry, I'll ask you both about some of the ways that structurally you can change the look of these schools. Helen, you talked about parent preferences. White parents seem to want to put their kids into white schools. But what about the structure? It seems to me if I didn't want poor kids in my school, I would just not fund free and reduced lunch, and I would not have transportation, and I could easily create what looks to be a fair school, but it really wouldn't be. No. I mean, are there other kind of structural ways in which you can kind of keep people out?
Technically, charter schools are not supposed to keep out expensive or explicitly keep out expensive to educate kids, like kids with special needs or language problems, but there are lots of ways that charter schools probably do keep those sorts of students out. So, so even if you see that charter schools have a reasonable compared to the rest, say, of the district proportion of special needs students, I would guess, and all the data I've seen suggests that the special needs students that they're serving are the ones with the who are the less needy among those with special needs, because the charter schools are not set up to address the problems of special needs students, or at least those with serious special needs. So the effect of that is to push those students back into the traditional public schools. So the traditional public schools are responsible for all children, including those who are more expensive to educate, either because of their special needs or because of their language difficulties, which puts the charter schools in a better position to serve with the money they have the needs of the or the educational needs of the students right. who choose them.
And then those traditional schools are also dealing with diminished budgets because some of their money's gone to the charter schools.
That's so, right.
But let me ask you, Barry, it sounds like, and I don't know, I didn't ask you, Helen, whether or not in theory this is a great idea. Let's let a thousand flowers grow. Let's get some experiments out there. We need some new ideas. So the devil's in the details, perhaps. Is there a way to structure this so that these barriers to diversity can be removed and require, you know, that money be spent on free and reduced lunch and transportation, and really oversee these schools to ensure that there's the kind of diversity we want?
Well, I think when they lifted the charter cap a couple years ago, that was one of the things that was discussed is, you know, are you going to provide all this? Are you going to require this for the new charter schools? And they went against that because they said they wanted to leave the flexibility to the individual schools. What I'm seeing now, however, is I think Dave talked about this earlier. He talked about maybe some of the tension amongst the traditional schools and the charter schools is lessening to some degree. There's some efforts that I know in Forsyth County, there's a freshman representative from Forsyth County. He's got an idea of making that whole county a charter school district to get rid of some of the regulations and be able to make the changes that they want to make there. I just wrote a story about an organization based in Raleigh that's trying to get some charter schools in rural areas, and they're hoping to get buy-in from the local school systems when they do that. So maybe there's some sort of, well, one reason we don't provide transportation or we don't provide meals is the expense. It's pretty expensive to do that at one school, a small school. Well, if you can work and cooperate with your local school system who already has the expertise, then maybe that becomes something that's financially manageable. So there are efforts to do that.
Helen?
And I'd just like to reinforce that notion, because that's the direction I'd like to see communities in this state and the state to proceed, is to think about all schools having responsibility to educate all children. And the question is, how do you work together in a cooperative way to make that happen? So, for example, here in Durham, we've got 9 charter schools, may well have more in the next few years. So the question is, how can the school district work together with the charter schools, maintaining right. their autonomy, to make sure that all children are served? And, there are lots of ways to do that, and there are discussions going on in Durham right now. So the notion is maybe working with transportation. Schools could work together on that. Professional development for teachers. Charter schools typically don't have money for professional development, so the district might be able to help out with that. So I think the important thing is to get the charter schools working in a cooperative rather than competitive way with the local school district.
Well, and I'm sure the competition, some of the resistance has come from the school district. They're the ones who really expressed the biggest concern. So it strikes me that getting school districts to open up might be the way to go. I don't know how much resistance there is from charter schools. Dave, do you have a sense of what else is happening around the state in terms of that kind of cooperation?
It really depends on the leadership in the school district. You know, you're seeing here in Durham and you're seeing in Charlotte-Mecklenburg a superintendent that's willing to enter into these conversations and to see if what things can be done. And there's also the realization that's just sort of setting in now across the state that charter schools aren't going anywhere. They're going to be around. They're probably going to grow. And they're probably going to continue to draw some resources. And if you're a superintendent, you've got to get past that and be able to try to work with charter schools. And the other thing that's really happened, and you've seen it everywhere where charter schools have gotten a pretty strong toehold, is that the choice options within that school district have enhanced and grown. Magnet programs, opportunities, choice within schools, those things have been not only grown, but you've seen school districts take on a much more consumer-oriented marketing effort to try to say, hey, we know you've been at a charter school, but we think this new magnet program at this school is something that's really going to fit what you're looking for. You're seeing this especially the majority of charter schools are elementary schools. As students get older, they may realize the charter school opportunities within their communities are starting to lessen, or the charter schools are so full that getting in a lottery is not going to be a likely scenario. So they start looking at magnet programs, and the magnet programs now are maybe better funded, but they might be more geared toward, especially a curricular basis, something that you've experienced in the charter school. So you see a lot more families now bouncing back and forth at those entry points of middle school and high school.
And to some extent then, Dave, what you're saying suggests that charter schools have had, at least in part, the desired effect of making improvements, even if it's in terms of competition. Let's wake up and start to compete with these schools. But Barry, on the other hand, that Stanford report showed that 37%, I think, nationally of charter schools were performing less well than public schools. Only 17% improved, and about 46%, I think, were at the level. I mean, what do you think accounts for that? Why haven't we seen better performance by charter schools that have been around for quite a while, at least nationally?
That's really a good question. I think in a lot of ways, you know, we see traditional schools. There are good, very good traditional schools. There are traditional schools that are not that good for various reasons. And I think maybe you see charter schools. I don't know that it necessarily exactly patterns, you know, follows that same pattern, but I think you do see some of that. I think in charter schools, a lot of charter schools, there have been charter schools that have closed. If they are really doing poorly and continue to do poorly, or I think more of them have closed because of financial problems. If, you know, if they're not doing well, their charter will get revoked if they're not living up to it. So, you know, that is actually in some ways, you know, a positive that the charter school has. And I think what you just mentioned, too, about the competition, I think that is good. I think that's good for all schools. And, you know, we used to say in the newspaper business, you know, when I worked down in Gastonia at the Gaston Gazette, that we were a better paper because, you know, the Charlotte Observer was next door and we were competing against them. And I think the Charlotte Observer was a better paper because they were competing against us for, you know, people in Gaston County.
Elder.
Competition works best when the playing field is level. And it's not level in many ways. I mean, some schools serving disadvantaged students face much greater challenges than others. So it doesn't surprise me, for example, that in Charlotte-Mecklenburg, a lot of the charter schools are serving white students and disproportionately white students. It's easier to have the school look good when you're serving students from advantaged backgrounds. So the fact that there isn't a level playing field means this competition argument doesn't work very well in the education.
And the entire process of choice, you know, when you're equipped to make choices, you do research, you're able to do these things. And you know, families with more resources are more equipped to go through the process. And it's a complicated process. You know, I've covered education here for a lot of years. My own kids have gone through this process, and we've looked at charter schools and public schools, and kids have gone to different places. It's a complicated process that I've had trouble understanding. You can imagine how overwhelming it is for a family that doesn't have the resources that some other families do. So the whole idea of choice can create some of that. So the best idea I've heard, or at least I like the most, is this idea of child and family advocates helping families get through this process of choice to help them make the best choice for them, who would pay for that? Some school districts have implemented this and paid for that process. That, to me, seems like an idea that would help a great deal as you sort of navigate this whole choice process.
Barry?
When we're talking about advantages and disadvantages, when a lot of I talked about earlier about charter schools, maybe they don't have the economies of scale to do some of the things. They also do not get the capital funding from local governments, the traditional schools do. So not only are they having to provide the operating expenses, pay the teachers, run the building that they are probably renting, maybe they may have been able to buy it, but they don't have the capital money coming from their local governments the way that the traditional schools do. So that's kind of in some ways a disadvantage to the charter schools.
But it also suggests that the schools with the better connected parent base are going to look better and be better funded and better built, which once again I think could build into disparity.
It could.
Very quickly, I've got 30 seconds left, but I'm concerned about this oversight, a very small department in the Department of Public Instruction that will now oversee a growing number of charter schools. Barry, is that a concern?
Well, you still have your local boards that are overseeing, or the local board of directors that are seeing it. And also, you still have – this is a choice that the parents have. If that school is not producing, the parents can pluck that child out, and that money no longer follows that child in that school.
Ellen?
But that means that our system as a whole doesn't work very well, because then the traditional public school has to deal with the students it starts out the year with, plus all these students who then leave the charter schools and come back.
The conversation continues. I want to thank you, Helen Ladd, Professor of Public Policy Studies and Economics, Sanford School of Public Policy at Duke, Barry Smith, an Associate Editor at the Carolina Journal, a publication of the John Locke Foundation, and Dave DeWitt, WUNC's Education Reporter. Thank all of you for being on the program.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Just ahead, Walter Raleigh, Fact and Fiction. Stay tuned.